Good morning, everybody. I'm sorry there aren't quite enough source sheets yet. They're just printing up some more downstairs, and they'll be up in a few minutes. I also apologize. I'm just on the other side of a cough, so my voice is a little bit hazy. I wish I could suck and chew and talk at the same time, but it'll all end badly. So hopefully I have enough voice to last about 50 minutes. Be'ezrat Hashem, it'll get better soon. Next week and the week after, I'm actually in England, so I won't be here for the next 2 weeks. There will be a substitute, but my apologies that I won't be here then. Now, we'll have the sponsorship. This year is sponsored for the whole academic year. Le'ilu Nishmois Brana Bas Brandit and Zelig Ben Kalman, Zichronim Livrocha. And we are very grateful for that sponsorship. If I could just ask you, please, to turn off your phones. And if you're the person who's not turning off your phone, if you could also turn off your phone, that would be very helpful. Last week we talked about Milchiks on Shavuos, and it got me all excited about Minhagim. So what I'd like to do is, from when I come back from England in a couple of weeks' time, Be'ezrat Hashem, talk about some Minhagim that we haven't ever spoken about before. There's lots of options. But first of all, I felt it would be useful for us to have an overview of really what is minhag, where does it come from, why is it binding, what are the different types of minhag. And this is actually a very complicated topic, because there are so many different minhagim, some of which are still there, extant, and some of which have died out, and some of which are now universal, and some of which are very specific. Just to categorize them is a difficult thing. I'd like to try and do that in two different ways at the beginning, and then maybe we'll talk a little bit more about the different types of minhag as we go through. So the word minhag, many of my students who come to Israel for the year think the word nehag means stop the bus, because that's what they hear. People shout nehag, so they assume that means stop. When I tell them it means driver, then they're very surprised. And the word minhag appears only once in Tanakh as the word minhag. And it is actually talking about somebody's driving. Who's driving? Yehu. Yehu HaMelech. Yehu is anointed by Elisha's Talmidim as being the rebel king who is going to kill off Malchi Yisrael. And there's that, this whole chapter deals with Yehu and Izebel later on as well. If you look at number one, Vayagid at Sofa Leimor. So the lookout who is watching out for Yehu coming, he's looking out and he says, Ba Adalehem, there's someone coming, Veloshav, and he's not turning back, Vahaminhag Kaminhag Yehu ben Nimshi. And the driving looks like the driving of Yehu ben Nimshi. Why? Ki Bashigayon Yinhag, because he drives like a Meshugana. The first Israeli driver in Tanakh. Okay? And therefore, the minhag, oh, thank you, Rabbi Shor. Rabbi Shor is here with a few more sheets. Okay, it's they're in the process. And therefore, there is this mashal of what is minhag, what is the derech, and what is the halakha. If you think for a second about how this works, I'll just wait for a second as the sheets are sent out. You can, the first little part of the shir is not so source-based, so you'll be okay. If you think about it, the word halakha means to travel. And what are you traveling down? You're traveling down the derech Hashem, which God says to Avram Avinu, there's a derech Hashem. The derech, of course, comes from after the chet of Adam and Chava. Originally, before the chet, there's an Eitz HaChaim. And after the chet, then Hashem says, we don't want them to take from the Eitz HaChaim. Now there's what it says, a derech Eitz HaChaim. It turns into a derech Eitz HaChaim. And therefore, there's a road that you have to travel down in order to get to your destination. And there's a lot of beautiful imagery. The Kruvim which guard the Derech Eitz HaChaim, are the Kruvim which appear next on the top of the Aron Kodesh, which is the Eitz HaChaim Hi Lamachazichim Bo, etc. And therefore, there is now a Derech that we have to travel. And if the Halacha is the process of traveling, is the Derech is the way the road we travel on, then the Minhag is the way that we travel. It's the form in which we travel. I was thinking of naming this shir, it ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it. Which, if anyone remembers, was a famous 1930s Ella Fitzgerald favorite. But and that's pretty much what it is. It ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it. The minhag is actually very specific, and everyone has their own minhag as to how to go down the Derech Eitz HaChaim. There are many ways to categorize minhagim. I've given you two. One is on the basis of who made them, and we're going to see this in the Shir. Some minhagim, and they're all called minhag, and this is why it's complicated, because they're all very different. There are minhagim which are made by Chazal, called minhagim, we'll see. There are minhagim which are made by later gedolei haposkim, but they're made from the top down. Then there are local minhagim made by communities. And sometimes it's difficult to know, where does a minhag start? Did it start from the top down, or did it start from the bottom up? And then there are minhagim created by families, and then there are minhagim created by individuals. And we're going to look at that structure a little bit more. But I also brought you another categorization based on the type of minhag. For example, there's what's called minhag nevi'im. For example, Arava on Hoshana Rabbah. It's called minhag nevi'im. We'll see whether it's minhag nevi'im or yesod nevi'im. We'll see that in a minute. Or Halel on Rosh Chodesh is a minhag of Chazal. The Gemara talks about the fact that Halel really is meant to be on Chag. And there were some communities where they were doing Halel on Rosh Chodesh. And wow, what is that? And the answer is, that's a minhag. And by the way, that you will see in different communities, in the Sephardi communities, there are many Sephardim that do not make a bracha on Mikra Halel. Halel on Rosh Chodesh, because it's a minhag. And the Rambam says, you do not make a bracha on a minhag. And therefore, they will make a bracha on Halel on Chag, which is a halacha, but not on Halel on Rosh Chodesh. The Ashkenazim do make a bracha on a minhag, and therefore the Ashkenazim do make a bracha on Rosh Chodesh. Whether you make a bracha on Halel and Yom Ha'atzma'ut is nothing to do with whether it's a minhag or a din. That's a whole different shit. Then there are things which are called minhagi isur, where we refrain from doing something which is otherwise permitted in order to make a kind of fence to protect a halachic area. Classic example is kitniot on Pesach. And a big question is, where did kitniot come from? Was it from the top down? Did a group of rabbis get together in the Middle Ages and say, we think it's a good idea to stop eating kitniot? Or did people have bad experiences, you know, finding bits of wheat in their rice, and they said, oh, I'm not going to do that again. So we're not going to have a whole shir on that today, but that's a good example. Not eating milk and fish together, which you'll see many Sephardim have a minhag, not to eat milk and fish together. My daughter, when she did Shirut Lumi, so she was in a dira, all with Sephardi girls. And the nickname they had for her was the Goya, because she ate tuna with cottage cheese. Because why should she not eat tuna with cottage cheese? She's Ashkenazi. And the other girls are looking at her in horror. It's like, ah, Goya, you know, whatever. It's okay, it's not such a terrible name to be called in Shirut Lumi. I've been called worse. So then don't eat milk and fish together. Then there are minhage psika. I'm not going to talk much about these, but we sometimes say there's a minhag in how different communities pask and halacha. Like, broadly speaking, the Ashkenazim follow Rav Moshe Isserles. Broadly speaking, not always. And the Sephardim follow Rav Yosef Karo. That's a minhag psika. That's what we follow. There are certain communities, like the Yemenites, tend to follow. Certain Yemenites tend to follow the Rambam. That's a minhag psika. That's how they go. Then there are minhagim mamanut, which we're not going to talk about at all, which are minhagim in business. Even though, technically speaking, something might not be a halachic kinyan, if this is the minhag in the business world, like a handshake and mazel and bracha, and you're done, or the fall of the auctioneer's gavel, obligations between employer and employees, etc., the law follows the custom, they are minhage mamanut. Then there are minhage eida, which are ethnic practices, a lot of our nusach hatfila, the way we pronounce the words. I'd like to actually focus a shir on how we pronounce the words and whether you can change the way you pronounce the words. That's actually very interesting. I've had some very heated conversations with people over that over the years. Life cycle events, you know, lots and lots and lots of minhagim. Community, ethnic minhagim. And then I put at the end two other kinds of minhagim. There are things called minhag ta'ut. It's an incorrect minhag. It may be made with good intentions, but it doesn't make any sense, and you have to stop it. And I brought you an interesting example of where the Tur calls something a minhag ta'ut. Look at number two. There's going to be lots of sources on the sheet. We're not reading every single one, but I'd like to show you this. Look at number two. So it says the Tur. Now, if you remember back to your days in Chutz La'aretz, in Maariv, at the end of Maariv, there's an extra brocha. Yeah, Yiru'ainenu v'ismach libeinu, da-da-da-da-da, ha-melech b'chvodot tamid yimloch aleinu, etc., which they say at the end of Maariv. So we don't say that on Shabbat. Even in Chutzlaris, they don't say that on Shabbat. They just go from Hashkivenu straight into the Shomru. So look at what the Torah says. The Torah is living in Spain. Number two. B'Shabbat Omrim, on Shabbos, you change the final bracha of Maariv to Ufros Aleinu Sukkat Shalom. Okay, we kind of do that. V'chein kasvo ha-goinim v'oid nogim b'til tula. Betulitula, they have this minag in other places. Shela'acha she'amru pasuk v'shomru. V'shamru, after they say v'shamru on Friday night, Ome birkat hamolech. They put in this bracha that we in Chutzla, in Israel miss out anyway all the time, but they put in this last bracha in Maariv. They change the opening. Bimkom yiru einenu. They have a special Shabbos version. Omru, they say yismchu hashemayim v'tagel haaretz, and it says v'ze minhag taud. It's just a mistake. Some well-meaning people wanted to make a Shabbostic version of this bracha, but they didn't realize the whole bracha is irrelevant to Shabbos. Shaloi tiknu brikas hamoylech ela lefi shetiknu lama psukim sheyesh behem yudches askarot. Because the only reason they have that bracha during the week is because it's got 18 times it says Baruch Hashem. And they're keneged, actually 19 now, keneged the 19 brachot in the weekday Shemona Esrei. Shepishem yudchet askarot, tiknu loma brik brach achrehem. But given she ain omrim psukim b'shabbos, we don't say all these brachas on Shabbos. Lama yomer ha-bracha shetiknu b'shvilam. The whole thing is just a mistake. Just stop it. It's not a bad mistake. It's just a mistake. A minag ta'ut. And then there are things called minhag shtut, where it's not just a mistake, but the whole thing is just against the halakha. It's just wrong. The whole thing is ridiculous. And I brought you an interesting example of which is talked about quite a lot in this, which is as follows. Yesh Omrim, says the Levush, there are people who want to say, De'ein mit ablim al ben rishon or ben b'chosh shemet la'adam. Rachmana litzlan, if somebody loses their firstborn son or their only son, people said, no, we don't have to. There's no avelus. There's no avelus for a b'chor. Why on earth? Ube b'chor nois din tam, they give this reason. Kiven shehu kadosh l'ashem, ve'ein roi li ta'abel alav she'einu shelo. The b'chor never really belonged to me anyway. The b'chor belonged to Hashem. Aval minak shtus. V'talsu, it's complete nonsense. They're breaking a Torah prohibition, a law, mitzvah, which is avelus. And chayavim litabel alehim. It's absolutely obligatory for a person to have avelus, God forbid, for a child, even for a firstborn child. And therefore, there are minhagim which go against halacha. If you look in them before the pre-chadish, says, avalim haya isur b'davar, if there's an isur involved in your minag, afilu isur drabonon pshita shehaya mevatala minag. You have to stop the minag. When I was growing up, I don't know about you, in Chutz La'aretz, when they do Birkas Kohanim, so in my community in Leeds, people used to turn around and put their backs to the Kohanim. Do you ever come across that? Okay. There's no reason for it. In fact, there's a reason not to do it. When someone gives you a bracha, you don't turn around and put your back to the person. You face the person. And no matter how much the rabbi screamed, then no, the people still turn their back. Why? Because they're nervous that if they see the hands of the Kohanim, you know what the Bubba Meisters are? If you see the hands of the Kohanim once, you'll go blind. And if you see them a second time, then you'll die. Which actually raises the question, how can you see them a second time if you went blind after the first time? But don't ask Kashas. Don't ask Kashas. Okay? But the point is that you're allowed to actually see the Kohanim. They cover themselves with a talus. And the people also cover themselves. It's just an incorrect minhag. They have other minhagim, for example, in Chutz La'aretz, they don't duchen on Shabbos, which is an interesting minhag. Now, whether that's a minhag shtus or a minhag taos is not so clear, because it's not. They may have a reason why they didn't duchen on Shabbos, but I'm not getting into that now. But so there are lots of different kinds of minhagim, and let's not forget how important minhagim are. Chazal saw them minhagim as baked into the system. Look at a couple of fascinating midrashim, which again are just there to express how important minhagim are to the way we see spiritual life. Number five, Amar Rabbi Tanchum Bar Chaniloi, La'olam al yishana al minhag. Never go against the minhag. Don't cause trouble. Don't go against the minhag. Sheharim Moshe alalam arumim. Moshe went to Shamayim's famous midrash. Lo achal lechem. Moshe didn't eat for 40 days and 40 nights. Why? Because in Shamayim, the minhag is not to eat. Malchei Ashares, when the angels came down, Yaruhu Lamata, when they came to Avram, Vachlu Lechem, and they did eat. Because you don't go against the minhag. In Shamayim, the minhag is not to eat. In earth, the minhag is yes to eat. Again, on a certain level, it's almost like a trivial discussion. But I think what it's communicating is that we see minhagim as in Shamayim and in Aretz. We see them as a real thing. I mean, leave aside the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have anything to eat. Even if he did want to eat, there was nothing to eat. That's not the point here. Also, you know, in number six, you have even an even stronger version of this. Where do we know that there's a mitzvah in the Torah to bury people? So the Gemara says, Amalei Shvur Malka LaRav Chama. So Shvur Malka, the Persian king, says to Rav Chama, Kvurim in HaTorah Minayim. Where does it say in the Torah you have to bury people? By the way, I often ask this to my students, and they never know the answer. You know, I don't know, maybe here, maybe this one was buried, maybe that one buried. So Ishtik, Rav Chama didn't know the answer. V'loi Amalei V'loi Midi. He didn't respond. Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, and Rav Acha Bar Yaakov heard about this. He said, Oi, Imsa Alma Bidei Detipshi. The world has been handed over to fools. Like, who can't know the answer to that? The boy led a meimah, he should have said, Kikavotik Berena Beyom Ahu. It's a mitzvah, it's explicit. Even with a capital criminal, where you have to hang the criminal, you have to take them down, you hang them after you've killed them, you have to take them down and bury them, they deserve a burial that night. You might have turned around and said, like, really? Him? He deserves a burial. And by the way, this was way ahead of its time. If you'd have gone to any European city in the Middle Ages, the first thing you'd have seen hanging on the walls as you walked into the city were all the bodies of the criminals they'd hung for the last however many months. This is what's going to happen to you if you don't play by the rules. We wouldn't do that even 3,000 years ago, even a criminal. Kal vachomer, great Uncle Harry, who, you know, was not a criminal, of course he deserves a proper burial. By the way, the Torah often does this, gives you an extreme case from which you learn a kal vachomer. Bal tashchit, not to waste resources, is learned from a case of a battle. I mean, you know, who cares? I need to win the war. Now, even in a war, you have to not cut down the fruit trees, kal vachomer elsewhere. The laws of what a husband has to give for his wife in marriage is learned from the Amah Ivriya in Mishpatim, when a man marries the maid. So he's going to say, listen, she's the mate. She's lucky to get married to anyone. Not certainly to get married to me. Why do I have to give her anything? No, even the maid, you have to give all the support, everything you need to that she needs as a wife. So this is another example. So it's in the Chumash. So the answer is, excuse me, what about Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov? They buried people. Why didn't he quote from them? Minhag Abalma, they were just following the minhag. Ah, Minakavri HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, what about when Hashem buried Moshe? So it says, Delonish Minhaga, he was also following the minhag. God says, look, the minhag of these people is to bury. I'll bury Moshe. I don't need to bury Moshe, but I follow the minhag. The idea that God follows the minhag is I think, fascinating and is really, as I say, baked in. And I brought you a shlah, which I'm not going to read in detail, number seven, the Shlah actually brings from last week's Parsha. I couldn't resist it because it was Mamash on the Parsha we just read, with all the Nesiim, that they all brought the same Korban. So let's read the first two lines. For Kol Yud Bet Nesiim, all 12 Nesiim, Kol Echad Haitza Lo Kavana Bifnei Atzmo. Each one had his own Kavana, his own way of doing it. We see in Bereishis Rabbah, Al Kein Meforish Korban Shel Kol Echad VeEchad Bifnei Atzmo. That's why it gives you every single Korban. The Lo Ama B'Ktzara doesn't just summarize and say Ploini Hikriv Gan Kein Kaploini. This one brought like that one. V'Kol Kavanasam LeTikun Kiyum HaOlam. Since they were all doing it differently to fix up the world, Negid Avos VeEmahod Shehei Ma'amidi Olam. And he brings that there was a parallel in Shamayim and a parallel in Aretz, meaning you need 12 tribes, says the Shlo. We never had a nation of one tribe. We always had a nation of 12 tribes. We always had different people keeping the same halakha, but in their own minhag. So we don't have tribes anymore of Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. But we have Levim, but we don't really in that sense. But we have tribes now, Sfaradim and Ashkenazim, etc. Now we're going to have to talk about whether all our approach to tribal Israel has changed now that we've come back to Eretz Israel. Do we still wish to retain the very Sephardi Ashkenazi flavors of the Jewish people now that we're all together? Or do we want to say, no, that's something from the Galut. That's something we'd actually like to leave behind. You know, we left behind Yiddish. We leave behind Kitnius as well. And actually, it's very interesting that in the religious Zionist world, there is a very consciously different approach to this issue than in the Haredi world. The Haredi world very, very much preserves Sephardi Ashkenazi distinction in Israel. Different kehilot, different schools, people don't intermarry, even to the verge that it's discriminatory in both directions, one to the other. Whereas in the religious Zionist world, this is very consciously not the case. Sephardi marry Ashkenazim all the time. Maybe there's a Sephardi shul. Maybe there's just different nuskhas where whoever goes to the, he just flips a little sign and he davens a different nuskh, etc. There's a very conscious shift there, and we're going to have to talk a little bit about that, what the different poskim say about that. Does everybody blend into one? And if everybody blends into one, what is the one? Rav Avadya Yosef did not quite see how Ashkenazim is still Ashkenazim in Eretz Israel when it's a Sephardi country. And he had nafka minas lahalocha. For example, if an Ashkenazi woman marries a Sephardi man, she can eat kidneyot. Of course she can eat kidneyot. She's Sephardi. If a Sephardi girl, says Rav Avadya, marries an Ashkenazi man, so she shouldn't eat kidneyot with her husband. But if she goes back to her parents, she can still eat kidneyot. Because she's Ashkenazi. Really? If she gets married in Detroit, she's Ashkenazi. But if she gets married in Yerushalayim, how can she be Ashkenazi? So we'll talk about how that works. But and therefore, if you look in number 8 just for a second, you'll see that the Chazal spoke, or rather here is the Rashba, I should say, very, very positively about Minhagim. Kol takanas ha-kehilis ha-minhagam. All the different enactments of the Kehilis and the Minhagim shal Kehilis, Torahi. Minhagim is Torah. U'b'chol k'yotzi b'zeh yesh lama minag mevatel halacha. And we'll have to see what that means. Even to the point that minag can wipe out halacha. When? When does minag wipe out halacha? Minag is so important, it's a Torah, and it can even wipe out halacha. On the other hand, on the flip side, look at the top of page number 3, number 9, the Bali Atosa's famous statement, Gam katafta she'ein l'shanas ha-minag, mipnei alaz, you've just written to me, says Bali Atosfus that you shouldn't change the minag because it's going to make, you're going to create laws, it's going to create, you know, lashon hara on people because you're now doing it differently. He says, no, listen, minag ze gehenum lemafreya. Minag is gehenum spelled backwards. You think every minag is good? Minag is gehenum. She'im shaitin nagu, if fools do this, chachamim loy nagu, clever people don't do it. Va'afilu minag hagon, even a good minag, only overrides halacha in very specific circumstances, which we're going to see soon. So on the one hand, you see different attitudes to minhag. Minhag is Torah, minhag overrides halacha. And on the other hand, minhag, and maybe it's different kinds of minhag, minhag can be gehenim. I once heard, and I'm sure I read, but I can't find it anywhere, and I've asked everybody, and nobody else can find it. So if anyone hears this and finds it, please send me a postcard or whatever you do these days. I'm sure that I read that Rav Hirsch says that minag is like korbonus. It's very, very kaddish, and you have to really look after it well. But after a certain time, it's like passes its sell-by date, and it turns into noisar. Noisar is chayv kares, meaning what was a korban to eat tonight, by tomorrow morning, you'll chayv kares if you eat it. Well, turn from very kaddish to very not kaddish. And it was either Rav Hirsch or someone, and please tell me if you can find it, who said the minhagim are a little bit similar. They're great until they're not great, and when they're not great, they're really quite damaging. And we'll have to see how that works. Okay, so let's talk about a few different kinds of minhag. First of all, minhag created by Chazal. Now, don't forget, the word minag is sometimes used, and I'm going to do this quite quickly because it's not really my focus, as just an alternative way of saying a mitzvah d'rabbanon. Look at the Rambam in number 10. Bet din shegazru gzeiro tiknu tzakana, or in higu minag. The Beis Din Sanhedrin can make a tzakana, a gzeira, or a minag. Upasha d'adava b'chol Yisrael, if the Jewish people accept it, v'amad achreim Beis Din acher, and a later Beis Din comes, u'bikish levatel dvarim harishonim, and they want to overturn the earlier one, la'akor oise tzakana, oise gzeira, oise minag. So then, Eina Yachol, they can't overturn it until they're greater. But if you see, he's just used the phrase minhag as another form of rabbinic law. There's takana, there's gezerah, and there's minhag. Totu, he says in number 11, kol mi she'ein oisek ha'orasem, if you don't follow the Sanhedrin, and it's dafka the Sanhedrin and Chazal, oive b'loi sase, you're breaking a Torah mitzvah, shenema loi sasor min adavar asher yigidu l'chayim min asmal, loi sasor. Loi sase is a heavyweight mitzvah. You can't go against the mitzvahs Chazal, and you can read this yourself. He says at the end, "Lufi mashis shah saricha v'hein gezeiros." This includes the gezeiros, the tzakonos, and the minhagot. What he calls minhagot, I'm not sure if it makes a difference. It's minhagot, not minhagim. But the point here is, he's saying that don't make the mistake of thinking minhag is something very light. Minhag can be a form of drabonon, but also don't make the mistake of thinking that applies to every minhag. He's not talking about every minhag. He's talking about the minhagim that Chazal introduced. And let me give you some examples. Number 12. Rabbi Yochanan, thank you very much, Rabbi Shaw. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi have a machlokes. Chad ama arava yisoid neviim, v'chad ama arava minag neviim. So there is a machlokes as to whether arava on Hoshana Rabbah is yisoid neviim or minag neviim. Yisoid or minag neviim? Okay, thanks, Rabbi Shaw. What difference does it make whether it's Yisod Nevi'im or Minag Nevi'im? So Rashi says it's a Nafka Minag, whether it's a Tzakana or whether it's a Minag. If it's a Tzakana, you make a Brocha. If it's a Minag, you don't make a Brocha. Which is very interesting. He says you don't make a Brocha on something which is a Minag. Do we make a Brocha on Arava, on Hoshana Rabbah? No, we don't. We basically say it's Minag Nevi'im. So that is a Minag, but it's baked into the halachic system. It's not like a minag that somebody started recently. So too, second day Yontov. People don't realize this. Second day Yontov, the rubric of second day Yontov, quite a famous line in number 14, why do we keep second day Yontov, say Chazal? And I mean, people today make the mistake of asking, oh, I don't understand. In the time of the Gemara, they didn't know which was the right day. And now we know which is the right day. So why do we still keep? That's just a mistake. In the time of Chazal, they also knew which is the right day. They ask it explicitly. They say, now that we have a fixed calendar, we know which is the right day, why on earth would we keep second day Yontif? So number 14, V'hashta de'yadina b'kvir de'yarcha. Now we have a fixed calendar, we know the right day. My time avdin and trey yomi, why on earth would we keep 2 days in Chutz Laretz? Mishum de'shalchu mitam, because they sent out from Eretz Yisrael, his haru b'minhag avosechem b'yadechem. Make sure you keep the minag of your parents, of your ancestors, clear and firm in your hand. Zimnin Gazra Shmada, maybe there'll be a decree against the Jews. They won't be allowed to use the calendar anymore. So second day Yontov has a halachic framework of minhag. Now that doesn't mean it's a minhag in the sense of, oh, it's my minhag to, you know, eat bagels and lox on Sunday mornings when I've got more time for breakfast. That's not that kind of minhag. It's a minhag which is a din derabbanon. But it's important because now you apply the laws of minhag to second day Yontov. So if you come from a place with one minhag and you go to a place with a different minhag, do you keep the old minhag or the new minhag? And that all goes to the issue, to keep 2 days, to keep 1 day, do you intend to go back, do you intend to stay? And all of it, all of the discussion about how many days Yontif you keep starts from the question as to, is this a minhag or is this not a minhag? Not that it's a minhag, it's take it or leave it. It's a minhag in the sense that's the rubric of the halachas of second day Yontif. And we had a share once on that, Baruch Hashem, and we talked about, is it a tzakana, is it a minhag? When you're in Israel, do you do what the Israelis do? When you're in Chutz Laretz, you do what the Chutznikim do? I get a lot of questions on this. By the way, it's just a fascinating way that this changes. The whole reality of second day Yontif is, I see, changing very, very rapidly. Less and less and less people in Eretz Israel are keeping, when they're here for holidays, for vacations, are keeping second day Yontif. It's very interesting. I see this changing in front of my very eyes. I've been involved in more, on the more kind of right of center, midrashot, more yeshivish Haredi, and almost everybody used to keep second day Yontif. And now it's like a half-half in many places. It's very interesting. Anyway, let's leave that aside. There are... You can't find a second. Well, you know, it's interesting because even if you're allowed to keep a second day Yontif, maybe you're not allowed to daven in a minyan. We see there are. There used to be, but the Mishnah Berurah says if you keep second day Yontif, you shouldn't daven in a public minyan because it's a zilzul. And there are all sorts of stories for that. But that I'm just mentioning that is a kind of minhag, which is just another name for a din derabbanan. So that's one kind of minhag. But there are minhagim created later. Look at number 17. And we'll see where they come from. What is if it's not the din derabbanan of Loisasa, or where would this other minhag come from? So look in number 17 with me. Says the Rif. Now the Rif is living in North Africa, Sfaradi, 11th century. Ika ha minhag she'osin al piv. What is minhag that we follow? Why do we follow minhag? Hu she'roiv ha'kahal yithyatsu im ziknei ha'kahal. Where the people take advice from their leaders, from their rabbinic leadership. Okay, and they are attacking something. The leaders and the people together work out that they should do something, they should keep something. That is what I mean by minhag. Even many years later, we're not sure where it began. We're not sure how the minhag started. But we know if it was a minhag that the people took advice, and they did together with the poskim. It doesn't go away. You don't just change the minhag because you forgot why you're keeping the minhag. And this is an interesting question. Sometimes people keep minhagim and they're not sure anymore why they keep those minhagim. I mean, kidneys actually is a bad example because everybody knows why we keep kidneys. The question is not why we don't eat rice, it's why we do eat potatoes, because they should probably also be kidneyed, but I'm not getting into that now. But there are other things which, you know, I've heard along the way people do minhagim and they're not sure where they come from. Somebody once told me that every time they kasher meat, I mean, who kashers meat anymore? But every time they kasher meat, they always light a candle. Because my grandmother lit a candle and her grandmother lit a candle. Beautiful. Like why? Was this a Kabbalah Shabbos when you kasher meat? Why did they light a candle? No, it wasn't the bulbs. Because when you kasher meat, you have to leave it to soak for a certain amount of time. And they worked out that they used to have candles with lines on, so they knew how long an hour was. That's why they used to light a candle, okay? Okay, so that you don't have to keep that minhag, I don't think, anymore that you light a candle when you kasher meat. But the point is that some minhagim, says the Rif, you don't necessarily understand. But don't just throw away a minhag. The Rosh, number 18. He's building this on a Yerushalmi, which I put later on the sheet, where it's not clear what the halacha is. This is a good opportunity for minhag to step in. Halachacha minhag. You follow the minhag. Perish. Im yesh rifayon b'halacha. If there's an unclarity, a weakness in the halacha, she'ein boru l'cha k'min nivzaka halacha. It's not clear which way the halacha should be paskin. V'ra'ita shenoigim, and you look out and the people do X, halacha minhag. Trust the people. We'll see in a minute why you trust the people. Because you have to assume if this is what the Frum community does, the Rabbonim have seen this. The Rabbonim have been manhig the people that way. And sometimes we see this with, brochas. What brocha do you make on a banana? Okay, people make adama on a banana. I mean, it is right to make adam, but you know, the Evid, if you made an eight, maybe that works, but you should make a bracha on a bird. But what bracha do you make on chocolate? We had a whole share on this. Remember our share on chocolate raisins? And if you remember, I had a whole share on chocolate raisins, chocolate-coated raisins. What bracha do you make on chocolate? So I know people who make adam on chocolate. Why not? It grows from the ground. That's the only way you eat the fruit. You don't eat the beans from the cocoa tree. You eat them as chocolate, so they make a brapri adam on chocolate. Okay, so that's not the minhag. The minhag is to make a sha'akol. When you have a l'chaim in the middle of a meal. So the Mishnah Berurah asked, you make a sha'akol on your whiskey, on your slivovitz. Why not? It's got nothing to do with the meal. The minhag seems to be people don't make a bracha on their whiskey in the middle of the meal. Meaning, sometimes there's areas where the halacha seems like, in theory, the halacha should be eggs, but it's not clear, and the people do this. Follow the people. Says the Rosh, the people are not just making it up. The people have taken advice. And he actually draws a distinction in number 19. Tzarech loyma sheyesh chilug b'minhagim. There are different kinds of minhag. Demas nisin ayri b'minhag. When we're talking about minhagim, you have to keep. B'minhag choshev, an important minhag. Shenagu b'nei makam al pi tamidei chachamim, that the people are doing with the supervision and approval of tamidei chachamim. V'tamid chacham nagim ahem. The tamid chacham made this, help them do this. Aval minag garua shel bnei medina, but the people stam have a shtuyot, a minag that they do. Shenago me'atzmam, davarecha, they just do something with themselves. Mutzalatir and shelo bifneim, you can just, get rid of that minag. The question is, how do you know? How do you know when the minag was made with the consultation with chachamim, and how do you know? We'll talk a little bit more about that maybe in a few minutes. But why? Why would I have to keep such a minag? It wasn't made by Chazal. We're not talking about a minag from the Sanhedrin or from Chazal. It's not loy sosor, like the Rambam said. So what is it? Why do I care? Okay, so we'll see that. We'll see that. Al tifrosh min hatzibur. But have a look in number 20. There's a posik in Dvarim. Loi sasik gvul reacha asher gavlu rishonim. Don't move the boundary fence of your field which the earlier generations have set up. This is the mitzvah of stealing land. Meaning you don't steal land by picking it up and running away with it. You steal land by going out in the middle of the night and moving the fence another foot onto, into the next door neighbor's land, and you have a foot more land. You're not allowed to do this. So Chazal understood, or at least we see from Rav Shrira Gaon, who seems to be quoting Chazal, number 21, Rav Shrira Gaon the Gaonim, Chayev kol adam lebilti shanos haminag. People mustn't change the minhagim that they have. De amrinan, because they say, who's they? Sounds like he's quoting a brisa, although we don't have this brisa. Milalan de minag milse, minhaga milsehi. How do we know the minag is a real thing? Dechsev al tasik vulrecha ashe gavlu rishonim. And the key is, why does it say the word rishonim? Why doesn't it just say, don't move your neighbor's boundary fence? Why does it add which earlier generations put there? Minag, you have to keep the minag, and the Taz rules is on Shulchan Aruch number 22. Chayev kol adam levil tishanus minhagam. You're not allowed to change minag. Request from Shiragon from there as well. Interestingly, I brought you two sources in 23 and 24, which I don't think ever go together. One is Philo of Alexandria, who was a Hellenized commentator from the early first century. And the next is the Imre Baruch of Vishnitz. I'm sure people would say a lahavdil between them. I'm not sure. But let's just look at Philo first. Philo. Now, what's interesting about Philo is Philo doesn't come from the tradition of Chazal. Philo is a Hellenized Jew living in Alexandria in Egypt, and has no connection really, certainly no connection with Bavel, where they later wrote the Gemara, and not really any connection very much with Eretz Yisrael. He's a very interesting kind of test case. What were the Jews doing in Chutz La'aretz during the Second Temple period? He lived during the Second Temple. Look what he says, number 23. Obviously, I translated this, I didn't translate it. It's a translation from the Greek. Asur ze gam l'shmirat minhagim. There's also a prohibition. You have to be careful to guard minhagim. Minhagim atikim. Old minhagim. Ki ha minhagim heim chukim sheloi nichtavu. What are minhagim? They're unwritten laws. Takanot anashim mi yamei kedem. Things that you inherited from earlier generations. And then he says, yiladim minadin hu sheyinchanu ha me'avoseim. Children should inherit from their parents. Milvat nichseihem, not only their property. You don't just inherit your parents' property, but minhage avos shebehem gadlu, the minhagim that you were raised with, v'chayu ma'arisas yaldosam, from the cradle, you were raised with minhagim and you inherit them. V'lo yavozu lahem mishum shenimsru b'loy t'uda shebichtav. And don't reject them just because you can't find a source. It's very inappropriate to say, well, there's no written source for this. And this calls into, the play, which is very important, I have to mention. I'm not going to read you from it, but everyone has to read this, if they haven't already, many times. Rabbi Professor Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik's Rupture and Reconstruction. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, the son of Rav Soloveitchik and a very eminent historian, still very active, just produced another a volume of essays that was even reprinted. He's in his mid to late 80s now. He wrote a landmark essay 25 years ago called Rupture and Reconstruction, and it's definitely worth the read. It's quite a long essay. You can get it online. Just put in Rupture and Reconstruction. You'll find a PDF of it. Ad kedei kach that recently, the Tradition Journal, a couple of journals ago, did a whole edition marking the 25th anniversary of this landmark essay, reanalyzing it, how does it receive now, and how has it changed? Rupture and Reconstruction, basically, as a historian, Rav Soloveitchik, or Dr. Soloveitchik, I should say, puts forward a thesis that we used to have, what Philo just said, this kind of mimetic tradition. We inherited, we saw what our parents did, we copied them, we davened in shuls that our families had davened in for hundreds and hundreds of years. We didn't get everything from books. And the 20th century ruptured that, not just the Second World War, but the First World War, and even before the First World War. There was a disconnection because of all sorts of historical and sociological reasons. And when we came to recreate the Masorah after the Second World War, the disaster of the Holocaust, we recreated it by necessity from books, because we had now Piskei Halacha and the Mishnah Berurah and the Perushim, and we'd lost that Masorah, which had been so important before. And he's not necessarily saying it's a bad thing. He's a historian. He's not making judgments. He's just saying it's a thing. And sometimes you wonder, he kind of starts off, why were our great-grandparents, who were very, very frum yidden, somehow or other, what they did is not frum enough for us today? Their Kiddush cups were too small, and we have to keep, because, and he basically explains there was this rupture, and we've reconstructed from a more written Masorah rather than from a metonymy that you see still. I remember Dan Lopian, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, in London. Don't know if any of you knew Dan Lopian. He was very much a Masorah person. He had Masorahs from Eastern Europe. When you used to ask him if a certain shaver was kosher to shave, or he cut too close, he'd take it and he'd kind of shave his arm and look at how the hair worked on his arm. When you asked him how much matzah to eat, he'd kind of like go, like about this much, and your hand this. He didn't have like a laminated sheet with like this much and this much. Again, I'm not knocking the laminated sheets. Sometimes if you don't know, you got to know. I remember he talked about Chadash and Yashan. For hundreds of years, the Ashkenazi community has been lenient about Chadash. And we've said that Chadash, the mitzvah, Doraita of Chadash, only applies to grain that grew in Eretz Israel, which means it practically doesn't apply because almost no grain has been grown in Eretz Israel for this time. And therefore, all the grain from Canada and America and from wherever it is, we were never makpid in Chadash. We always ate, even though it was technically speaking Chadash. So now there's a lot of people who are saying, well, this is ridiculous. Why are we so lenient in Chadash? I mean, you know, now we don't have to be. We can get Yashan, and there's all sorts of bakeries now open. We're only Yashan, only Yashan, only Yashan. So I was told that Dan Lopium was asked if there was a loaf of Yashan and a loaf of Chadash next to each other, the Chadash that we've been eating for 500 years, but now people don't want to eat, which one would you take? So like, you take the Yashan, surely. I mean, why take something on which there's a whole halakhic thesis? No, I take the Chadash, because I want to make it clear that for 500 years, our ancestors have been eating this, and we're not frumer than them, and they knew what they were doing, and there's a Masorah. He was very much a Masorah person, which is interesting, because it kind of grates against the way that we go today, but that's really what we're seeing there. And if not from Philo, then take it from the Vishnitzer Rebbe. Number 24. The Itma Mishmei the Rabbeinu Tzadik HaKohen. It's said in the name of Rabbeinu Tzadik HaKohen Milublin. Zeichet Tzadik Livrocha. Now that all the Torah Shebaal Peh has been written down, what's left of Torah Shebaal Peh? Mishum Eis Lasos Lashem, Heferu Sorasech. We've written the Gemara, we've written all the Meforshim, Kamavur Begitin, Hari Minag Yisrael Heim Ikat Torah Shebaal Peh. What's left as Torah Shebaal Peh? Minhagim. And therefore, don't knock the Minhagim. Hasagas Gvul is an important pasuk. And there's also a pasuk in Mishlei. I brought you on the top of page 5. These are quite short sources. A similar source. Al Tasik Gvul Olam. Don't change the boundaries of the world up until now. Asher Asu Avaisecha. Your parents have laid down boundaries. And the Alkut brings down, again, that is the mitzvah of Minhag. So there's an idea of Hasagas Gvul. We don't change the boundaries. That's our Torah Shebaal Peh. But there's also an issue of Torah Simecha, and I actually talk about this in my book quite a lot, the book on Snis that I brought out a year ago. If you look at number 27, Shema Bani Musar Avicha Va'altitosh Torah Simecha, so the Rashi says there, Altitosh Torah Simecha, Minhag Makomcha, Minhag Makom. There's something which is Musar Avicha. It's musar, it's more directive, it's more specific, it's clearer, it's black and white, that's halakha. And then there's Torah Simecha, it's a more sort of organic tradition. And that's minhag. And if you only have musar avicha, then you're missing an entire element to the halakhic personality. You have to have the balance. If you just have a father and you don't have a mother, then you have an imbalanced parenting, and the other way. So minhag, says Rashi, is the Torah Simecha, and we mustn't lose that, because then we just end up with a harsh black and white, everything's osser, everything's mutter, but it doesn't work in that way. And I brought you the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, who basically says the same thing. Look at underlined in 29. We mustn't change our minhagim from the previous generations. Okay, fine. So we talked about minhagim created by Chazal. We talked about minhagim created under the guidance of the Gedolei HaPoskim, the Rosh, the Rif, Hasagas Gvul, Torah Simecha. There are other minhagim which are created by communities, which are bottom up, and the Gemara gives them a lot of respect. Have a look in number 30. Quite famous in Pesachim, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, Makam shenagu laisois malacha ba'arve Pesachim, ad chasois oisim, in a place where they do malacha, on Erev Pesach, but in the morning, meaning everybody didn't do malacha in the afternoon, it was the time for Korban Pesach, it was the time to get ready for Seder, but in the morning, some communities went to work and came home at lunchtime, and some communities took the whole day off. So in a place where they do malacha, so do malacha. Makam shenagu shaloi laisois, meaning follow the minhag of the community. If you go from a place, one place to the opposite minhag, basically you still stay yourself. You still stay the person that had the old minhag, because you're going back. But just make sure you don't cause machlokas. Keep your minhagim, but don't cause machlokas. You don't have to switch until you become part of the new community. But if you're part of a community, you have to go along with the communal minhagim. A good example of this, I think in Sniud, even though it's not a shira in Sniud, is the concept of Dat Yehudit. Dat Yehudit that we've talked about, the Jews' rules, literally Dat Yehudit, the rules of the Jews. when Chazal decided to define what are the minhagim of tzniut in each different community, so Chazal said, well, we can't possibly say. We can't legislate now what every community should decide is appropriate or inappropriate speech, behavior, etc., dress. There's some red lines. They say, you can't walk around flirting with everybody and you can't walk around with all your arms showing. They give certain red lines for women, maybe for men as well, not for now. But Chazal say there have to be minhagim. The women of the community have to decide. For example, some of my students sometimes come up to me and they say, Rabbi, why can't I have a nose ring if Rivka had a nose ring? So first of all, I'm not sure you can't have a nose ring. I mean, I'm not getting into that discussion now. Maybe it depends what kind of nose ring. But why is it even relevant that Rivka had a nose ring? Why is that relevant to you? I mean, do we walk around dressed like Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? If I walk around dressed like Avram, they'd lock me up. They say, Nebuch, the guy's got Jerusalem syndrome. Just, to sort of a long term. So the answer is, Chazal say, no, the women have to decide in that community what is appropriate, what isn't appropriate, with this jewelry, not that jewelry, this stockings, not that stocking, etc. And if you visit from community A to community B, you still stay yourself, but you have to adjust. Like I say to, our students when they visit Meir She'orim for Shabbos. So you go to Meir She'orim for Shabbos. So how are you meant to dress when you visit Meir She'orim for Shabbos? So I said, you don't have to get dressed up like the locals. You're going to dress up like you're going to braid your hair and you're going to have a little button-down shirt. I said, that's called Purim. They'll think you're making fun of them. They don't expect you to dress up. You just have to dress like yourself, but adjust in a way that you're not going to get people upset. You don't think they should get upset? Okay, but they get upset. You can't make machlokas. You got to adjust the way. So that minhag of the community, even if the community created the minhag, and and as you said before, number 31, Hillel says number 31, Hillel Omer al tifrosh min atzibur. You've got to fit in with the community. You can't start making machlokas. That is also part of minhagim as well. And therefore, if something is widespread, then we take it seriously. And I brought you a whole bunch of sources, which I'm not going to go through at length because, I can summarize it quite quickly, that the Jewish people are given a kind of quasi-prophetic status. There's this famous Gemara in Pesachim also that leads on from the Mishnah. We said that Hillel is asked a shaila about what the halacha is if Pesach falls on Erev, if Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos, how do you carry the knife? And he goes, oi, I forgot. And it's all Midik and Neged Midik because he just gave them Musa that how could they forget the halacha? And so they may bounce one back. And he forgets the halacha. And he says, I don't know what to do. Let's see what the people do. And the next day when they saw people put the knife in the horns of the goat or the wool of the sheep, and he says, oh, that's exactly what the halacha is. Trust the people. Im lav nevi'im heim, b'nei nevi'im heim. The Jewish people have a kind of, almost like a nevuah. If you just look at number 35, I want to bring out that source. Harim vur lanu says as follows, demasha haminag muskam etzel kol Yisrael. When Jews who are sensitized to minhag and halacha, when they do a certain thing, who al pi ruach hakodesh? They have a certain ruach hakodesh. She'ashem yisbaruch hofia b'neihem u'mamash ka'al pi navi hainhigu. It's like the navi had told them. They have this ruach hakodesh. Ki al yidei harotzon v'hamaseh l'shem shamayim me'er Hashem yisbaruch mechlal kneses Yisrael. If the people are trying to do l'shem shamayim, then there's a Ruach HaKodesh that helps them. Ruach HaKodesh, Eich Nichok, how they are meant to behave. So again, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur, that the Jewish people have a Ruach HaKodesh. We're very, very slow to turn around and say everybody's been doing it wrong. And you see certain poskim, the Aruch HaShulchan, is very, very, very reluctant to take anything that the Jewish people do and say, they're wrong. The people have got it wrong. How can you say that the generations of the Frum community, that they've got it wrong, you know, and they didn't know? It's difficult to say that. Now, today it's not quite the same because today there's a lot of people who just don't know what they're doing and they just do stuff and they're clueless and they don't really learn. And okay, I understand that. That doesn't create minhagim. But in principle, the Jewish people, there's a lot of reliance invested in that. But let's talk about two other things before we finish, which is minhagim from families. How do I know if I'm bound by my family minhagim? People ask me all the time. My parents are Hasidish, they say, and they don't eat gebrochts. But I don't have a Hasidish and a Shama. And I don't know if it's their neshama or just their appetite. But I want to eat gebrochts. The truth is, good luck in Israel finding anything that's gebrochs in Israel, because everything has become Hasidish. I'm an old Litvak. I like my knedlach, and you know, and even the knedlach are potato flour now. You have to really try hard to eat gebrochs. But are you bound by gebrochs if your family never ate gebrochs? I have a friend that I was at university with many years ago. His family doesn't eat turkey. Doesn't eat turkey? Why don't they eat turkey? So when I say to him, why don't you eat turkey? So he says, well, why do you eat turkey? Meaning, you know, a bird has to have a masorah, going back to ancient times, and turkeys were discovered in the New World, and somebody looked at them halachically and said, oh, look, a big chicken. And it's not really a big chicken. It's not the same species. It doesn't even look like a big chicken. Now you can say there's a masorah because people have been eating turkeys for 400 years. But he said, my family has a masorah. Someone way back in the day saw a turkey doing something which is, you know, one of the signs of a trefa bird. We don't eat turkey. So let's have a look at number 39. So the Gemara in Pesachim, again, the same Gemara as we were talking about. The B'nai Baishan. Who were the B'nai Baishan? Is it a family or is it a community? That's a big discussion. Let's assume for now it's a family. The B'nai Baishan, the children of this family Baishan. Nog de loy have azlinu mitzur letzaydim amali de shabsa. They used to have a minhag that they wouldn't go on journeys on Fridays. It's always a question. You're flying back from America. Do you take the flight on Thursday from Newark that gets you in like early Friday, or do you risk it? Take the flight that gets in at 4:30 on Friday afternoon and it'll be all right. So the B'nai Baishan, they had a minhag. They wouldn't even go from Tzur to Tzidon. Tzur to Tzidon is a very short boat trip. It's a short boat trip. I don't know how long it is. An hour, 2 hours max. Now you never know. The boat could get into trouble. It's Friday. It's Erev Shabbos. So Asa B'nai Hu Kameh de Rav Yochanan. The children came to Rabbi Yochanan. V'amra, they said to him, Avasin Efshalo, our fathers could manage this chumrah. Anan lo yeshalan, we can't live with this. We do business on Fridays. We go to work on Friday mornings. We want to travel on Fridays. Amalahu, so he says, I'm sorry. Kfar kiblu avaseichem aleim. Your parents have accepted this on themselves. Shneim ashma bani musar avicha v'al titosh tarazimecha. I'm sorry. You're stuck. It's a family minhag. Now, if the B'nai Baishan are a community, rather than a family, you could say, okay, this is a community minhag, but maybe family is different. But if they're a family, maybe family minhag sticks. However, the Yerushalmi gives a different version of the story, which is actually very interesting. Number 40 says the Yerushalmi, very similar story. What if the people move location and they want to change their minhag? So this is a story, came to Rabbi Ba. B'nai Maisha, it's a different name, but maybe it's the same story. Kiblu alayim shaloi lifrish b'yamagodl. They wouldn't go out into the Mediterranean. So actually, if you look in the Meforshim, many of the Meforshim say, what was the chumrah here? It wasn't a Shabbos chumrah. It was a chumrah that we don't want to leave Eretz Yisrael. So if we go out on a boat into the Mediterranean to shortcut down to Israel, so we're going to Chutz Laaretz. And who wants to go to Chutz Laaretz? Even on a boat trip, who wants to go to Chutz Laaretz? So they don't want to do it. So fine, our parents didn't do that. Asun Shalom Rebbe, they came to ask Rebbe. Amrinale, they said to him, Avoseinu nagu shelo lifrosh b'yamagodl anumanu. Do we have to follow that? So Amalehen, he said, Mekivin shenau go behem avoseichem be'isa atashnu minag avoseichem nochi nefesh. Don't change the minag of your ancestors who are laying under the ground. You can't just reject it. But then the Gemara comes back at that and says, one second. Ve'ein adam nishal al nidrei? Can't you do hataras nadarim? What's the problem? It's like a neder. Go to the Rav and do hataras nadarim. So the Gemara says, one second. If you make a neder, you can do Hataras Nadarim. But how can you do Hataras Nadarim for your grandparents? So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Kol Shekein Yu Mutarim. It must be even easier. If you can do Hataras Nadarim for your own neder, which you willingly undertook, surely you can do Hataras Nadarim for something you never even agreed to, that you just inherited from your parents. And the Gemara says, actually, you know, you're right. There's no problem being bound by your parents. Actually, this is a halachic issue. It's not a minhag issue. It's a halachic issue. Are you allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael? Yes or no? It's a black and white issue. But it could be you're not bound by your family members. And many of the Meforshim bring down that you're not necessarily bound by family minhagim. You may need to do Hataras Nadarim. But look at number 42. Amamar Ukva. Ana laha, laha milsa chala bar chamru legabi abba. I am like vinegar compared to my father who is like wine. the famous Gemara. De ilu abba, because my father ki hava achel bisra hayden, if he ate meat today, loy hava achel gvina ad lamachar ad hashta, he waited 24 hours to eat meat, to eat milk, to cheese. Ve ilu ana, but I, bahasu dasa, well, bahasu dasa, huda loy achilna, in the same meal I won't eat, lesudasa achrinta achlina, but I'll wait till the next meal. So why didn't they turn around to him and say, chutzpah? You have a family minhag. Your father was like wine. That's very nice. Your father was like wine and you're like vinegar. But you have to follow the minhag. Any question? Yes. Very good. Okay, very good. Let's just hold that thought for a second. So number 43, a little bit deals with you. The Chavos Yair has a tshuva. I haven't got time to read it all. Where he says, what, you're telling me that you had some kind of pious great-grandparent? So because he gives them examples, they daven nates every day. They went to the mikveh every Shabbos. So for a thousand generations, you have to do that. You're no less pious than your grandparents. It's just you want to do something different. Kind of addresses your point and says, no, you're not bound by pious great-grandparents. You have your own version of piety. You have your own minhagim. You have your own chumras. You're not necessarily bound by them. And actually, many of the Mephoroshim take on that you can do Hataras Nadarim on money. On Gebrochs, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein says you can do Hataras Nadarim, and you don't. You're not necessarily bound. Why people want to be machmir is a good question. But that's a real thing. Okay, so we already said a minhag that goes against the halacha is a minhag shtus. If it goes against the clear halacha, then you can't have a minhag like that. But in many cases, these, as you said, are chumras, etc. So family minhagim are very interesting. But just finally, on individual minhagim, this in many ways is the easiest of all. Because the individual minhag basically takes a status as a neder. If you want to take on something, you can take on anything you like. You can stand on your head. You can, you know, refuse to eat chocolate for the rest of your life. It's a neder. You have the ability to refine your own personal avodas Hashem. Look for a second in number 47 on the last page. Says Rav Hirsch when he gets to Nadarim, he says it starts now at the end of our midbar, the sphere of what we call free-willed legislation. It opens the possibility for individuals as well as communities and the nation as a whole to establish permanent rules for ensuring the faithful keeping of the dictates of the Torah. And the Gemara says in number 48, Dvarim hamutarim, if something is mutar, the acherim nahagu behem issa, but you want to take on a chumrah, iatarashailin hog behem heta, you can't just ignore that. You've made a neder, kedela vatlan, you can't just be mavatlid, mishum shinema, lo yachel devaro. It's a neder. But okay, if it's a neder, so you can do Hataras Nadarim. And the Shulchan Aruch, which I brought you as the last source, he says, therefore, if you want to start a new minhag, always say Bli Neder. And if you don't say Bli Neder, if you intended to do it for permanently, then you better go do Hataras Nadarim. Even if you never said anything, even if you just took it on as a minhag, maybe if you did it three times, even without explicitly thinking, so you might have to run to do Hataras Nadarim. But it's a neder, it takes effect. And in that sense, a minhag has a very strong status, because a neder is a din d'oraita. I remember when I was a young man, I used to feel I needed to prove myself by screwing shelves onto the walls in my young married state and doing DIY in my house and doing all that kind of stuff. So my wife knew very patiently that I was completely useless at this stuff. Now I don't do anything. But one famous Sunday afternoon, I was screwing shelves onto the wall very frustratedly, and the whole lot came flying down on top of my head. So I ran out of the room and I said to my wife, I am never, ever, ever going to do any kind of home improvements ever again for the rest of my life. So my wife sort of nodded very kind of patiently. So then when I calmed down, she said, okay, who's going to put my shelves up then? Okay. So I said, well, not me. So she goes, Mincha, in 15 minutes, you can do Hataras Nadarim. And then she worked it out. She sent me straight to the Rav to do Hataras Nadarim. And those shelves, they went up. They were a bit wonky, but they went up. So, okay, what have we said today? Lots of different kinds of minhagim. Lots of different kind of categories of minhagim. But they have a real status. And I agree with you that sometimes people can hide behind them. But it's not something you can take lightly. Minhag is a real thing. And we will move onwards, Be'ezrat Hashem, 2 weeks from now, looking at some really interesting minhagim that we haven't looked at before. In the meantime, I wish you a very happy, healthy couple of weeks. Be'ezrat Hashem, we should have Besurot Tovot. 3 weeks from now. I'll be back 3 weeks from now. Thank you for the clarification. But there will be a substitute next week.